program comes from Bloomsterhus, hosting work from over 40 local artists, locally grown flowers, and Scandinavian-inspired gifts. Bloomsterhus, on Main Street, Facebook, and at 907-772-2566.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of In the Garden. I'm your host, Daniel Rowan Tucker. Well, 2 days of blazing sunshine and blue skies gave us a taste of what they call summer in other places, and then the clouds returned to save us from further sunburns. The salmonberry harvest has mostly peaked, but there are quite a few still out there, and I'm keeping my eye on the thimbleberries, which will soon be ripe. Lysimachia punctata, or yellow loosestrife, is starting to brighten up yards and driveways with its yellow blooms, while grasses going to seed add subtle shades of purple and russet to our sloughs and meadows. You can call in at 907-772-3808 with your questions or comments. I heard some positive feedback on last week's episode on birch trees, so today I'm going to share the story of another one of our iconic trees, the cottonwood. But before we dive in, I wanted to mention one more fascinating fact about birch trees that I forgot to mention last week. The word birch translates to burja in the ancient Sanskrit language of India, and this common root in the Indo-European language family indicates that it's a very ancient word indeed, up there with wolf and bear, some of our oldest words. So next time you see a birch tree, imagine someone 5,000 years ago knowing that tree by the same name. Now, on to the glorious cottonwood. The cottonwood trees we see here in Petersburg are Populus trichocarpa, the black cottonwood of the Pacific coast, also known as the western balsam poplar, ranging from Alaska to California and east into the Rockies, where it meets with its cousin, the eastern cottonwood, Populus deltoides. The trees of the genus Populus are also known as poplars, and cottonwood is simply an English name for the North American species of poplars. The Latin name Populus derives from the fact that these useful, fast-growing, and easily propagated trees were widely planted in ancient Rome and called the people's tree because they were so popular. In Spanish, cottonwoods are called Los Alamos, giving us the name of some places that we know down south, also Alamogordo, the fat cottonwood. And aspen is included in the genus Populus. Our North American aspen is Populus tremuloides. Willows are closely related and share many similarities with the poplars. There are a handful of Lombardy poplar trees planted around Petersburg. And these originate from a clone of an Italian tree, very similar to what the ancient Romans and other people living in the Mediterranean basin were planting along their streets and field edges thousands of years ago. You can see several of these Lombardy poplars to your left as you drive up to Hammer and Weekon Grocery. They're growing at the edge of the lawn by Mountain View Manor. There's also one or two, I think, over by the Lighthouse Assemblies of God Church. And while they appear to be somewhat stunted compared to the giant versions of them that are common down south in places like Skagit Valley, they still make a handsome tree here with their trademark fastigiate habit, meaning they grow narrow and straight up towards the sky. I have seen some much larger specimens of Lombardy poplar in Craig and Hoona, which are places with some limestone in the soil, and I suspect that a more balanced pH is the key to unlocking a higher growth rate for these trees. But right alongside those Lombardy poplars at Mountain View Manor are a couple of native black cottonwoods growing much faster and larger in the same soil conditions. Our cottonwoods are most at home in the rich soil of river floodplains, where they can shoot up to over 100 feet tall in the course of a few decades, send out zillions of their tiny seeds to blow far and wide on the wind in those little tufts of cotton, hence the name cottonwood, and then rapidly decay into a hollowed-out snag where eagles roost and black bears den. A tall grove of these trees, with their leaves shimmering and shaking in the breeze, growing beside a raging glacial river flowing out of high, snow-capped mountains, is a truly Alaskan sight. When those tiny seeds land on the damp mud and sand of a freshly exposed riverbank or roadside, they quickly germinate and start racing upward to keep their share of sunlight in the midst of fierce competition from other plants and trees. Then those big, leathery, heart-shaped leaves turn golden in the fall and grace our dark rainforest landscapes with a final blaze of color before winter. As spring approaches, the new buds swell with a sticky, resinous coating that fills the air with a heavenly fragrance, something that I can only describe as reminiscent of strawberries and honey. No one can forget that wonderful smell. I read somewhere that over a century ago, when homesteads were spreading out across southeast Alaska, folks would often plant a cottonwood tree by their shoreside homestead because they're very uncommon compared with all the spruce and hemlock trees around. And this would act as a sort of marker for when the mailboat came by. They could tell that there was a homestead over there somewhere that might need to send or receive some mail if they saw a cottonwood tree growing along an isolated stretch of shoreline somewhere. So that's kind of fun to think about. Some of those cottonwood trees are probably still around somewhere. Cottonwoods and poplars are the fastest growing broadleaf trees in the temperate zone. And while they aren't something you would want growing next to your house or in the middle of your garden beds, they are awesome trees for places with a little more elbow room. They have a reputation for becoming a liability when growing in close proximity to infrastructure like houses, power lines, sewer pipes. This is well deserved. These are big and powerful trees. They need a lot of space to spread out and eventually come crashing down. They do tend to drop big limbs as they get older. The wood is not super strong, just something to be aware of. And that's part of, on the flip side, what makes them great wildlife trees, because they very quickly get big, and then as they start to die back, they develop those old growth characteristics that make them so attractive to wildlife. Snaggy tops, hollow trunks, you know, big broken branches, things like that, that provide homes for our furry and feathered friends. So I would say, as a rule of thumb, you know, at least 50 to 100 feet away from any vulnerable infrastructure is a good idea if you're thinking of planting a cottonwood anywhere. But they have great applications in our more open spaces. There's some cottonwoods around the ball fields that are just doing a great job growing up, revegetating a large disturbed site far away from homes and buildings. And I think we definitely have room for more cottonwood trees around here. They can be kept somewhat in check with periodic heavy pruning. They will resprout. You can see, for example, the tree in front of the Singley Alley bookstore has been pruned on the top periodically, but given that they have a rapid growth rate, this is going to be an uphill battle and probably a job for a climbing arborist, given that as soon as the tree gets very old, it's going to be pretty big, and you're going to need some climbing gear to get up in the top. When they're still somewhat young, they will resprout if you cut them to the ground. And some people call this coppicing. So you could basically keep it as a giant shrub if you cut it to the ground every couple of years or so. And, you know, you'd still get the beauty of the leaves, and kind of keep it more manageable And a lot of commercial plantations of poplars are managed in this way. They coppice them on an 8 or 10 year rotation sometimes. And in that time, 8 to 10 years, depending on where they're growing, they can become a full size tree and make logs big enough for paper pulp. The biggest black cottonwood is a tree near Salem, Oregon, 155 feet tall with a 29 foot girth. Now, that's girth, not diameter. The diameter is probably about 10 feet or something like that. But still, that's a pretty huge tree. They're very easy to propagate from cuttings taken in the dormant season, ideally early spring before the leaves leaf out, but you could probably get them to root pretty much any time of year, even in the middle of summer, as long as you keep them moist. Part of the reason that poplars have been so popular for so long, they're very easy to propagate. Sometimes they propagate themselves by shedding branches along a river. The branches float downstream. If they happen to land on a nice moist sandbar in full sun, they sprout roots, they take off growing, boom, it's a new tree. Very good propagation strategy for itself there. They do need full sun. They won't thrive in the shade. They can kind of get by and make a very tall, skinny, spindly plant in a little bit of shade, but they really need full sun to do their best. They're widely planted in Iceland, of all places. They've been very successful there in afforestation projects. Also in the Faroe Islands, a very desolate, treeless, windy place way down in the South Atlantic. The wood has many uses. In spite of being fairly soft, it is light and strong for how light it is. In John Muir's book, Travels in Alaska, he records seeing some native seal hunters in a small dugout canoe carved from a cottonwood trunk way up in a fjord. I think it was somewhere near Sumdum Bay, up near a glacier with lots of icebergs, hunting seals from this tiny little cottonwood log dugout canoe, because the wood is very resistant to splitting. So even though it's very soft, if they crashed into an iceberg in their little canoe, it would be less likely to split open and dump them in the water than if they had a more traditional red cedar canoe, which is more prone to split. I myself have used the wood as a substrate for paintings. It absorbs paint really well because it's very porous. So once it's fully seasoned and you get all the moisture out of the wood, it will hold paint and glue very well, just soaks it up like a sponge. And poplar wood of various kinds was traditionally used for painting back in the Renaissance and even before. Many of famous Renaissance paintings, including the Mona Lisa, are painted on panels of poplar wood. The wood itself has a nice color. It's kind of a pale grayish with streaks of green, and can be very attractive. I've heard of people using it for cabinets and even flooring. Wouldn't be my first choice for flooring. It's too soft. But yeah, an underappreciated wood. Mike Woodworth milled up some big cottonwoods that were out at the old fir farm there, and got some neat wood out of those. So I encourage our local woodworkers to play around with that a bit more. I think it's underappreciated. The fragrant resinous buds are used sometimes for perfume making. They have certain medicinal properties. Native peoples have used them for making like a kind of a glue for waterproofing and sticking things together. All kinds of different uses. People fed the inner bark to their horses at times. If you want a really deep dive into the world of the cottonwood tree, I recommend a book called Cottonwood and the River of Time by Reini Stettler. Stettler is a forester by training, and he goes very deep into the population genetics and silvicultural history of cottonwoods and poplars and how they grow in the wild, how they grow in cultivation, and really fascinating book. Anyways, I think we have room for a few more cottonwoods around Petersburg. You know, they can be quite weedy when they're in a place where you don't want them, say in your driveway, you know, at the edge of your property, and it's like a constant battle to keep them back. But they can make such a beautiful sight, a grove of cottonwood trees in the fall covered with golden leaves. And the leaves, if you look closely, have the petiole, the leaf stalk that attaches the leaf to the twig, is very slightly flattened. And that gives the leaves a tendency to shake and flutter in the very slightest breeze. And this is probably an adaptation to make it harder for insects, leaf-eating insects, to land on the leaf. If you think about being a little bug flying around trying to find a leaf to land on and start munching away, if the leaves are constantly fluttering and clattering in the wind, that's going to make it a lot harder. And so that's a characteristic that cottonwoods have in common with aspens, very well known for their fluttering leaves, Populus tremuloides. And just one of the wonderful features of this tree, if you listen carefully in a slight breeze, you can hear this kind of clapping sound, almost like faint applause somewhere when there's a breeze blowing through a cottonwood tree. I think it's really lovely. Wonderful trees in a lot of ways, just need to be in the right place where their roots won't get into, you know, pipes and infrastructure, where they won't fall down or drop branches on structures. But I think we have room for a few more cottonwood trees around Petersburg. I would really love to see a whole grove of them, you know, like an acre just planted solid with cottonwoods somewhere in a public place people could go and visit. Could be really cool. Certainly there's a really wonderful cottonwood tree over by the Whale Observatory, a whale park, on Sandy Beach Road. And that tree in particular has very heart-shaped leaves. So if you're casting about next Valentine's Day looking for the perfect gift for someone, I guess the tree won't have leaves on it at that time, but, you know, maybe scoop up a few leaves in the fall and save them away. They're really perfectly heart-shaped, and that varies a bit from tree to tree. It's not true with every one of those, the cottonwoods around town, but that tree at Whale Park has those. Anyways, they're wonderful trees, and I recommend everyone to take a closer look at your cottonwoods. They're a gift. That's all for today, folks. Thanks for joining me.
Support for this program comes from Blomsterhus, hosting work from over 40 local artists, locally grown flowers, and Scandinavian-inspired gifts. Blomsterhus, on Main Street, Facebook, and at 907-772-2566.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bacon. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll I be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs. You can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side. Put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle. Homegrown tomatoes.
homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Now if I was to change this life I lead, well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden would be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money.